Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm delighted to be here with you once again. It has been an amazing month, October. I see the weather changing in many states, it's getting a little chilly here and there. I'm originally from New York, but I reside in sunny South Florida. I have my co-host with me, Shirley Carter. Are you there?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm excited about tonight's show. Get your pen, get your paper. You have a loved one in your life. You need to take down this information. National Breast Cancer and Domestic Violence Month. Val, this has been a hot, hot topic for the month.
Yeah, it's, you know, very informative. You know, one of the reasons why I started Hot Topics from the Soul was to bring awareness, to have a connection between the community and us, to, so that we'll have be as a lifeline to be able to, for people to be able to voice their opinions, whether it be financial, relationship, health issues. And right now and tonight we're going to be talking about cancer. You know, cancer, when you hear that word, you automatically think of women. You know, we're always talking about breast cancer, ovarian cancer. Everything always affects women, but men don't realize that cancer affects them as well.
The breast cancer, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a rarity. True, like 1% of all breast cancer occurred in men. And just for 2014 alone, there's going to be 2,360 men that will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And this is according to the statistic from the breastcancer.org Foundation. And out of that, a man can expect 1 in 1,000 will be affected by breast cancer in a lifetime. So it is something that, you know, as a norm, you really don't think about. Men have breast tissue too. You just barely, you think about women and girls and, you know, in that format, but men, boys, and everything, you have breast tissue. So you need to do your exams as well, and especially if you have someone in your family that has been diagnosed with it. It has been shown that men with the BRAC bracket 2, which is a genetic testing that you can have done, shared that gene, that they are, the chances of them coming down with breast cancer is very high.
Wow, yeah. You know, tonight we have two cancer survivors, and I have John Garcia, who is a motivational speaker, coach, trainer, and I've known John for a few years, and when he told me he had cancer, I was like, really? Because, you know, many of you don't know, I represent Les Brown, and I started Les Brown's Platinum Program, and John Garcia is a product of Les Brown's Platinum Program. John Garcia, are you there?
I am. Hello, Valerie.
I'm excited to have you, to hear you. I can't wait to see you, John.
Well, it's time. You know, it's been way too long, and it's time we got together again and put on some other seminars to help people all over the world.
You know, it's a shame that I have to put on an event for you to come see me.
Well, you know, I'd go see you, but everywhere I go, you've gone somewhere else. You move faster than liquid, you know.
John is absolutely one of my most favorite platinum speakers. We go back a long ways. You basically joined the platinum program within that.
Hello, Valerie. Are you still there?
I think we're having some technical difficulty, but until we can get this straightened out, we can continue to talk, John. When did you join the platinum program?
I joined the platinum program in 2005. God, has it been that long? I was only 3 years old.
Very young, started at a young age, and as a result of you joining that, what has your experience been like coming under the Platinum Program with Mr. Les Brown?
Well, you know, at the beginning, it was obviously intimidating. Who in the world, who in their right mind would want to go up on the stage in front of people who came to see the world-renowned top motivational speaker in the world and share that platform? That's scarier than cancer. So, you know, for some reason, was crazy enough to say, yes, Les, I'll join you on stage. And he mentored me, he coached me, he's helped me develop my story. And as a result of that, I've been able to go on stages around the world, literally, and help other people with obstacles that they're facing, whether it's cancer or any obstacle, whatever it is. You know, the one thing that I realized is that everybody has a story. And if you can learn how to tell your story to impact and inspire people, then you really can make a difference in the planet. And everybody has a story. And I'm just fortunate. I'm very fortunate that I was connected with Les and Valerie and the rest of the Platinum Speaker family, and that I've been able to travel and share my story and my stories relative to cancer and relative to fighting and beating this thing as we go around the planet, you know, trying to inspire folks.
Wonderful.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much, Shirley. And also, we have Michael Price on the line. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Now, Michael, you're out of Ohio, and you are a breast cancer survivor.
Yes, I am.
When did you find out that you had breast cancer?
August of 1991. I had two
August
sisters
of,
who, pardon me?
Okay, I didn't hear you. You said August of 91?
Correct.
Okay, now how did you find out that you had breast cancer? What prompted you? Did you go? Was it a regular checkup? Were you having discomfort? What was it?
Well, at that time, I was involved in martial arts, and one day in training, I got kicked in the chest, and I felt a little kind of like BB-sized knot under my nipple where I got kicked, and I didn't really pay much attention to it. And a few weeks later at work, we had our own physician, and so I pointed that out to him, and he told me that I should get that checked because men can get breast cancer also. But, at that time, I was in top physical condition, and I didn't have any pain or any sickness or anything, so I pretty much ignored it. But then my sister, Kim, she was living in Houston. At that time, she was going through her bout with breast cancer, and so I went down to visit her. And I pointed out to her and to my mother and my other sister, you know, the knot. And I was just joking, and I just said that I'm next, you know. And they didn't think that was very funny. And so they advised me that I better get it checked. And so I went to my family physician, and he didn't know what it was. So he referred me to a surgeon. And so she decided that we would go ahead and have a biopsy, which we had the biopsy on a Thursday. And she told me that they would get in touch with me on Monday. But the following day, Friday, she called me and said that they had bad news because that nodule that they took out was cancerous, and it was all the way to the perimeter. And so, therefore, they didn't know if it had spread or what, so she needed to have me come in and schedule surgery. And she had told me that it was breast cancer. at that time, just the word cancer, it was kind of devastating, you know, just the word cancer. And it kind of really shook me up, but I pulled myself together, and so I went and we did the biopsy, and after that we did the surgery. And then we found out that it was breast cancer, and then after the surgery, I went through 6 months of chemo and the whole nine yards. And so I fought it, and the hardest part of the whole cancer thing for me was the chemo. But the surgery and whatever else, it wasn't really a big deal. It was just the chemo. And so after the 6 months, I just went back to my training schedule and got myself back together. And I can just say that I'm blessed that I'm now a 23-year breast cancer survivor, male breast cancer survivor.
Wonderful.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that is wonderful, you know, and Michael, when I hear you talk about what you have to go through and finding out in one day that it was cancer, and you said your sister was going through treatment at the same time when you were actually diagnosed?
Yes, okay. Now, my sister Kim, she was diagnosed and going through breast cancer in April of 91, and then my sister Robin, she was diagnosed in June of 91. And
wow.
Then 2 months later, August of 91, is when I was diagnosed. So all three of us in that short period of time were all breast cancer. So we all had breast cancer.
Oh, my goodness. That is powerful. And that you're all, is there any other siblings, or you're the only, it's just the three of you guys?
No, I have a daughter who's going through it at the time. She just finished chemo. This is her second bout. And then I have a cousin and aunt who also have gone through breast cancer. And out of all of us that have experienced it, my sister Kim, she's no longer with us, but she battled it like two, maybe three times, and she was just a warrior, you know. And she battled it. And my sister Kim and my sister Robin and myself, we had like our own support group. So, you know, we strengthened each other and encouraged each other, and we were there for each other during the time that we had to deal with breast cancer.
Doing all the
now,
treatment
y'all all in the same city?
Kim was living in Houston at the time. I think Robin was maybe in Maryland or somewhere out of state, and then myself, I was in Oklahoma at the time.
Shirley, you had a question for him?
Yes, I do. With all of this, you know, cancer in your family, has anyone suggested, or maybe you've already taken it, the BRCA2 test? Has anyone been tested?
No, we haven't. I think Kim kind of had initiated it, but none of us have really ever, you know, followed through with it. But I've been, go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's a very strong history, and that test, and taking that test for many generations to come, whether they're male or females in your family, this is one test that can help with preventative measures for your family. And my other question to you is, what type of breast cancer did you have? Did they say it was invasive, or was it, was it triple negative? Or, you know, because what I'm hearing with it keep coming back, it brings those questions up for me.
Well, to be honest, I can't really answer that question because I really don't know the answer to that. And it's, you know, it's been such a while back that there's a lot of things about it that I don't remember.
Okay. And that's understandable.
Yeah, Shirley is a breast cancer survivor, so that's why she's asking the question. And that test that you mentioned, Shirley, how would an individual approach a doctor and say that they need that test?
Well, one of the things, there's two. There's the BRCA1 and there's the BRCA2. The one is for someone who has not had breast cancer. You need, you know, if you want to find out if someone in your family, as far as like a great aunt or someone down the line has had it. But when you've had siblings that have had it, like Michael is speaking of, there's there's the brace too, where, you know, you can tell your children and your grandchildren that we carry the gene, and it's the heavy gene. But the BRCA1 is usually tested on someone who has not had breast cancer but has a relative that has. So there's two forms of tests that they can take, and it's about taking the, you know, doing a blood sample, having your blood drawn. There's no medication you have to take. It's, you know, you have to fill out this questionnaire. You know, you go get your blood drawn, and they run the test on your blood. And that helps a lot with future generation with such a strong history. And being that Michael is a survivor, because the survivor rate is low, just because there's such a low number, a male that come down with breast cancer is lower than any women, whether it's your African-American or Caucasian or European, the percentage rate is much lower for men survivors. And for Michael to be a survivor with such a strong history and to have, you know, all three siblings at the same time battling it, that is very rare. It's almost, I've never heard of it before, honestly. And I have an organization, Michael, I've had it for 15 years, so I've done a lot of personal research and studies myself. And you're the first for me.
Well, Shirley, what about your cousin, though, that her and her sisters were all battling cancer?
Not at the same time, not breast cancer. That these, you know, theirs was 2 months apart. That is a rarity. Now, I've had lots of relatives, like I have a first cousin. All of her sisters have dealt with breast cancer, every one of them, and on some level or another, and it's been triple negative, but they've decided to either accept treatment for it or bypass treatment, and unfortunately, three of them have died from it. It went from breast cancer to uterine cancer. But it's how aggressive you are with your treatments, and they've got so many studies out and new forms of treatment, especially with breast cancer, and if it's triple negative, I have learned that the best way to treat it is not to attack it with the surgery and then chemo, is to give chemo and then do the surgery. Of course, do the biopsy to diagnose you. But once you do the chemo first and then the mastectomy, the survival rate goes up, and you actually switch from being triple negative to being more hormonal positive, where your survival rate increases tremendously. So there's been some changes over the year, Michael. I'm a 19-year, you're 23 years. There's a lot changed since we were diagnosed. And
right.
The changes came about in the last 5 years, you know, less than 10 years. So it's progress, but it's still not where, you know, with the amount of money that's going into research, where personally I feel it should be. So.
Now, my oncologist, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
My oncologist had recommended that any of my siblings, any of my children, whether it's male or female, need to be checked because, you know, there's a possibility that they could also have breast cancer. And as I said earlier, that my daughter, she's fighting it right now for her second time.
Yeah. Wow. Is it breast cancer as well?
Oh, yeah. This is her second bout. And the first time it was 10 years ago, so 10 years later, you know, she's battling it.
Wow. Well, you know, man's extremities is always God's opportunity for a miracle. And John Garcia, you are a miracle. When was it that you were first diagnosed, John?
Well, first of all, Valerie, all of us are miracles, and we're all miracles in the making, so thank you for that. I was diagnosed originally in 2004, in January 2004, and I was told that I did not have breast cancer. And as I'm listening to Michael tell a story and listening to the conversations, you know, there's some keys there. The keys are that to understand that things change throughout the years because there are so many studies that are going on, and there's so much more that we're learning, and there are new types of medicines and approaches that are being held by way of the studies. What's important, though, is to be tested early, because the earlier you catch it, the better chance you have of beating this thing. And, oh, by the way, you know, I used to tell everybody I was a cancer survivor.
John, I'm losing your volume. Can you give me a little more volume, please?
Absolutely. Is this better?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
So anyway, the bottom line is that, you know, people would always say you're a cancer survivor. And once you learn that every part of your body and every part of your mind has to fight this, you start using positive words. And the word survivor is positive, but ants survive and cockroaches survive. I like to use the word cancer conqueror. Go out and beat this thing. Just beat the heck out of it. And so back to your question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so back to your original question. In 2004, I was diagnosed the first time with stage 4 renal cell cancer, kidney cancer. And that was the first time. And unlike Michael, I didn't have other people in my family. And I have a large family, 14 brothers and sisters, mom and dad, hundreds of cousins. But I, unlike Michael, decided to take it all myself. No one else has had cancer in my family. So, but I've had it now four times stage 4 terminal cancer. And told each time I have less than 2 months to live. And here I am approaching 11 years, and just God is just really good.
Wow. So when you first got that diagnosis, what was your thought?
Well, probably like everybody else in the world that hears the words, you have cancer, they think you're going to die. And that reaction is natural because that's what used to happen. But just like Michael and Shirley and everyone else is talking about, you know, there are people who beat this thing. There are people who survive it. There are people who conquer it. It isn't necessarily a death sentence. But my initial reaction was, oh, my God, I've got cancer. I've got to get my affairs in order, and I'm leaving this earth. But that doesn't have to be, and that isn't always the case.
What caused the shift for you to take on that positive attitude as opposed to succumbing to their diagnosis?
Well, I think I went through all the stages. This is prior to meeting Les, but I went through all the stages of, you know, rejection and fear and denial. And I went through all of that, and one day I finally stood up and I said, I've got to fight. If I'm going to beat this thing, if I'm going to win, if I'm going to stick around for my family, I have to fight. And for me, fighting meant getting information, getting to the best doctors, getting the best care, doing the things that were important for me and my body. So it was a mind shift. But ironically, shortly thereafter, I met Les and I met you. In fact, I think I met you before I met Les. And we began talking about how you, with a change in your mindset, a change in your attitude, you could will yourself to do things that maybe doctors are telling you is impossible. And that mind shift was important, getting strong. Now, I've always been strong. I was a retired military warrior. I had been in harm's way many, many times, but never in a personal way like this thing called cancer.
How was it telling your family?
Well, initially, I didn't want to tell my children. I didn't want to tell anybody. But I realized very quickly that if I was going to fight, I needed partners. And my first partner was my wife. And when I told her, you know, she had obviously the same fears, but I hope she had the same fears. Maybe she went out and got a bigger insurance policy and started making a plan. No, I'm just joking. She had the same fears, but I knew that, you know, with one person fighting, it's good. With two or more, you know, my favorite book says, wherever two or more are gathered and ask in his name, it shall be granted. And I made it a point that I was going to tell everybody and have everybody helping me out, have everybody sending positive vibes, having everybody send prayers, having everybody send information. And through that, the network grew, I mean, exponentially. It's funny, you don't realize how many people you know that have moved and know other people. And, of course, being a military guy, I had traveled all over the world. And it didn't take but a couple of days, and I had prayers coming in from all over the planet. And I didn't realize the power of the Internet and the power of that prayer. But that's what I did, and I started telling everybody. It was hard. My children initially thought, well, you know, Dad's going to die, and I stopped them in their tracks, and I said, no, I'm not. Dad's going to live every day till the end of his life, whatever that is. If I go out and get in a car and get hit by a Mack truck and die, well, that's it. If I have 2 years to live or 2 months to live or whatever it is, I'm going to live every day. And I've tried to encourage them to do the same thing, and I try to encourage everyone I come in contact with to live full every day. Every day, and your life will just be richer. In fact, I will tell you, Valerie, and I will tell you that I believe my life has been more fulfilling since the diagnosis than it was prior, because I got on point and I got focused.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, in that transition, once you had victory over the first diagnosis, When did it reoccur again, and did it reoccur in the same place, or was it something else the next time?
Well, let me kind of back up and then and get everybody up to speed. I was diagnosed with renal cell cancer. That's kidney cancer. I had a huge tumor on my right kidney. Had killed the kidney, the adrenal gland, and I had a major blood clot going to my heart as a result of that. I didn't know I was sick. I did not know I was sick. I had no clue. But once I found out.
But John, so what happened? You went for a checkup, or you were having discomforts? What happened?
Well, kind of like Michael and getting kicked in the chest at a martial arts. I was on a plane trip from Honolulu back to Dallas, and I started feeling uncomfortable. I was riding in first class, but my back started to feel a little weird. And when I went, when I landed in Dallas, and I went to the men's room, and I had red blood in my urine, I knew something was wrong, but I had zero pain, none at all. And so that was the first clue. And I immediately went to see a doc, and of course, it didn't take long for them to figure out that I not only had a cancer, but I had a cancer that was not beatable. In fact, I went to that first hospital, and they said, there's nothing we can do. The tumor's too big, it's grown for too long, now you're bleeding, and there's just nothing we can do. And so at that point, I could have done what many people do and said, okay, and started making plans for my funeral. But I said, no, I thank you very much, but I need somebody else's opinion. And they said, well, it won't do you any good. And I said, I don't care. I want another opinion. And I went to another hospital, got the same answer, went to the third hospital, all within a matter of weeks. I mean, literally two and a half weeks, I'd been to four different hospitals, got the same answer. There's nothing we can do. And then I wound up at MD Anderson, where they said, they're right, there's nothing they can do, but we're a research hospital. And my point there is that no matter what people tell you in life, whether it's cancer or a relationship or whatever it is, whatever's going wrong, there's always another answer. There's always another avenue. There's always somebody
Amen.
In through your battle who can help you with your battle, whatever it is. You know, my favorite book, again, in Matthew 23:23 says, if you had the faith of a mustard seed and did not doubt. I mean, the smallest seed in the planet that produces one of the largest plants, if you had the faith of a mustard seed and did not doubt, you could tell the tree to jump in the sea, and surely it would. So I said, this is nothing but a mountain that I'm facing, and I've got to go up there and fight this thing. Well, long story short, I went to MD Anderson, got diagnosed, and they said, look, there's nothing they can do. We're a research hospital. We believe we can help you, but we don't know if it'll be successful. At worst, we'll have the ability to find more information via the study and help somebody else, the next person. And I said, absolutely, let's go for it. Well, fortune was on my side, God was on my side, and I got 6 years, Valerie, to answer your question. 6 years after that diagnosis of a very, very tough battle, but I made it 6 years before I was diagnosed the second time. And the second time, it was the same kind of cancer, kidney cancer, but now it had metastasized and formed multiple tumors in both of my lungs. And at that point, they said, it's stage four again, and there's nothing truly. I mean, we can't take your lungs out. And we started a chemo regimen that was a daily chemo that I thought was going to be a week or a couple of weeks, maybe a month. And it wound up being 3 years every day, 3 years.
Wow.
Yes, and my hair turned white from jet black to sterling white.
Yes, you look like Moses.
I know, it's funny because people say, you look so distinguished, and I tell them I'm trying not to look extinguished.
Yeah, I know, so, the last time I saw you was like, I saw you a few months, and then a few months later was completely silver. I was like, wow, you look like Moses.
I'll be sporting that bad boy. But so long story, so now I went 3 years after that second diagnosis, and it came back again in one lung, and it was a huge tumor. And we treated it and continued to fight it with a different study, a different chemo. And we beat that. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know that just 14 weeks ago, my back started hurting, and I went in for a regular checkup, and I had a tumor in my bones, in my rib. You probably don't even know about this one. And they went in, and they did a very advanced use type of approach, which is called a cryoablation. And I was in and out of the hospital pretty quickly. The recovery was pretty tough, but I was probably home about 3 weeks, having a little pity party because I had so much pain. And then one day I said, you know what, it's time to start flying again. And I jumped off that cliff, and I tell you, I've been traveling every day. I'm in Dallas today. I was in Chicago this weekend. I was in Amarillo and Abilene, Texas. I mean, I've been all over the country and all over the state as well for the last 8 weeks, every day almost in a different city. So, here I am. I'm going back to the hospital on November the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Houston just for a follow-up. But I don't want to be the guy that has another cancer. I'm done. I've had enough.
Mm. Yeah, I told you, you've been absolutely amazing. And would you say that because of your faith in God that you've been able to survive, or is it a combination of your faith and your family?
Well, first of all, I would say that I've been able to conquer because God is the greatest conqueror. Absolutely. My faith is first and foremost, because without my faith, I would have nothing else. And people say, well, you know, maybe it isn't God. I say, well, maybe it's not. But you think I'm going to go around and try to tell him, no, I don't need you anymore? Not a chance. Yes, absolutely. My faith first, my family, my friends, my everybody I know, my attitude.
Amen.
is a huge combination. You know, when I first was diagnosed, the doctor said, we're going to try this one approach. And I said, no, I'm a retired military guy. I'm a tactical guy, and I'm a strategist. We're gonna find a tactical plan, a five-pronged tactical plan. And we developed that plan, which involved the chemo and the medication, obviously, but it also involved diet, it also involved meditation, it also involved prayer, and it involved a whole new regimen of how I treated my body. And so, you know, there's not one approach. There's multiple approaches. There are people in third world countries who have never seen a hospital or a chemo ward, and they beat cancer. And, you know, by God, there's not just one approach.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, John. And I'm glad you brought up all of the dynamics of why you're still here, because there's so many people who get diagnosed with cancer and they refuse to take any treatment. Some of them just, you know, say, well, if God doesn't heal me, it just won't be done, but fail to take, you know, the medicine and change their diet. So that information, I feel, was very important, you know, especially when they're telling you you're at stage four and that there's nothing they can do, and yet you've been able to continuously punch the enemy in the eye since 2004.
So, Valerie, I want to say this one thing. You know, there are so many paradigms that we have from our childbirth to our, you know, life as we grow up and grow older, and we believe whatever story we've heard or whatever story, you know, that's out there for us, whatever reality is. But I will tell you that when people hear about chemo, they think about poison, they think they're going to die, and it's bad stuff. It is. But I will tell you, there are so many advances. And there's not just one kind of chemo. There are hundreds of different types of chemo. And for myself, the guy that goes to MD Anderson very, very frequently, I know that they have targeted chemos for different kinds of cancer. So people need to take that old paradigm and throw it out the window and then get educated about what's available and then make a decision, an educated decision, as opposed to one based on just whatever belief or paradigm they have.
I'm going to ask a question. Okay, I'm going to ask a question to you and to Michael, and then, Michael, you can continue on and ask, you know, say, make your comment.
Okay.
But one of the questions that I want to ask both of you, starting with you, John, is, did you feel that your manhood, you as a man, had been dismantled because of this disease?
Yes. I guess the short answer is yes. And let me explain in 2 minutes or less, or 1 minute or less, to get Michael some chance to talk. You know, you think that you're put on this earth, you're the provider, you're the person who's supposed to be over helping other people, especially if you have a family. So you're the strong one. But you know, there are times when even the strong need help. And I had to, in my mind, say, look, right now is the time that I need help so that I can get stronger. I was strong, but I'm going to get stronger as a result of this. But only if I listen, only if I do what they're telling me, only if I change my actions and my reactions. So, like I said at the very beginning of this conversation, cancer has made me stronger.
Thank you so much for that, John. Michael?
As for myself, it didn't even enter my mind. I didn't even think that way, you know. But the thing is, when I first noticed the knot under my nipple, I know how important early detection is now, but at that particular time, being that breast cancer was something that you didn't really hear about in men, I ignored it for 2 years. After I first noticed the nodule there, I ignored it for 2 years. And I'm very blessed and very fortunate that it didn't really go any further. But I have a very strong positive attitude. And once I, like John said, the mind shift, once I had that mind shift, then I'm the type of person that I feel if I was in an airplane crash, I would be the only one that would survive, you know. So my attitude was like, okay, it's up to me and up to the Lord now. I know he'll do my part, so it's my turn to do my part. And I just had a completely positive attitude. And the whole time that I was going through chemo, I also did some kind of, it was hard, because all of my energy was kind of depleted. But I still did some kind of a fitness regimen, you know, to help just to kind of keep things together, you know. And just being positive and just having a healthy lifestyle and having my faith in the Lord, you know, these are the things that helped pull me through. And at that particular time, John had, well, he had all of his family and friends, you know, that were there to help him. But myself, I was alone because at that time I was married. But my wife left me while I was going through chemo. So my whole family was back here in Ohio, and I was pretty much in Oklahoma by myself. And so I had to really battle and deal with this on my own. And it just gave me more strength, you know, to fight it and to get through it. But being positive and having a healthy lifestyle and having your faith in the Lord, those are the things that got me through, and that's what continues to get me through life.
Hmm. Now, Michael, you said that your wife left you during the chemo. Had y'all been having problems before you knew you had cancer?
Well, 6 months before I had cancer, she had a son from a previous marriage, and he was born with a congenital heart disease, and he went in for a corrective surgery, but he never made it. He died, and so she was just devastated through that. So she was dealing with a lot, you know, she was dealing with a whole lot on her own, and just the cancer that I was going through kind of, I guess, you know, made it a little more tougher on her, and I guess maybe she didn't want to deal with it, but we weren't really having a lot of problems at that time.
Okay.
And then even after surgery, when I woke up in the recovery room, now, okay, when her son went through cancer, they did the surgery, when he went through his heart surgery, after the surgery they came down to the waiting room and told her that everything went well. But then a little while later, they came and told her again that, you know, we had some problems, and so we're going to have to take him back to surgery. And that's when he ended up dying. Well, when they brought me out of surgery, when I was coming back, when I was waking up after surgery, the nurse asked me did I want to look at, you know, where they had did the surgery. And I looked down, and all of a sudden there was blood everywhere. And so what happened, I guess I kind of hemorrhaged. And so they had to take me back to surgery. And so when they went and told her that we have to take your husband back up to surgery, that was kind of reliving what she went through with her son, you know, because they had to take him back to surgery. So it was a tough time for her, and it was a tough time for me, but I just, you know, pulled a hold of myself. I'm like a diehard battery, and I just, you know, just pulled myself together and battled it, and I'm blessed and fortunate enough to be here and to be able to talk about it and to share my story and to bring awareness, you know, that men can also get breast cancer.
It's amazing. I'm listening to the tenacity that you and John possess, the relentlessness of, you know, not giving up, fighting, and, you know, being able in the fight to enlighten individuals of the fact that there is hope, that it is not a death sentence if you're willing to participate, if you're willing to get in there with your gloves on and start swinging.
Absolutely.
You know, listening also to you guys, now, John, you continue speaking. You've continued traveling the world, doing what you do. Do you think that if you didn't have your career as a speaker, that your mindset would be a little differently regarding this disease?
That's a hard one to answer because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's difficult to answer the question. I always had a tough mind. I mean, like Michael, he was a martial artist. I was as well. I was a military warrior, so I had to be always at the top of my game. But cancer can make a grown man cry. But you have to get back up. You fall off the horse, you have to get back up. And the problem is most people don't get back up. I love Les's quote when he says, when life knocks you down, try to land on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. And that's really the key attitude. You have to be looking up to get back up.
Yeah, because, you know, and he's one of my other heroes. He's my superhero because he just keeps going and going and going, you know. So, and the reason why I asked that question was because you had mentioned that you had gotten another diagnosis and you went through treatment, and then you made a conscious decision, I've got to get up, because, you know, you had things that you had to do as far as travel, engagements that you had to make sure you fulfill. And so was that your driving force that helped bring forth the healing to cause that shift in you?
You just have to keep getting up. And if in my life, you know, as I think about my Lord and Savior and the stripes that he took, if he could get back up after all of that, I'm just going through a little old cancer. He got beat. He got stripped. He got. I mean, it was horrific. And yet, all I have is a little cancer. Get back up, John. It's time to get up. One of my brothers, and I have 14 of them. One of my brothers said to me, "I don't know what it's like to be diagnosed with terminal cancer once or twice, but four times. How do you do it?" And I said to him, "You know, Joe, so long as there's hope, you can keep fighting. But you, Joe, you were born ugly, and there's no hope for you." And the reason I tell that story is because laughter is such a key to healing. The endorphins
yes,
are releasing the laugh. So every time, you know, I mean, no matter where I'm at, no matter how tough stuff is, I laugh. And I make people laugh, and they go, "You don't have cancer." I say, "That's right, I don't have cancer, and it doesn't have me. There's a thing in my body, but you know, I'm not going to let it have me. You know, it's a mindset. It's like Michael, and you'll appreciate this in the mixed martial arts or the MMA world. How do you get beat? Either you get choked out, or you tap out. You quit. Well, this thing is fighting hard to tap. To make you tap out. I will not tap out. This thing is trying to choke me. But guess what? You picked on the wrong guy, because if you're trying to take me out, I'm going to take you out, cancer. Now, you want some of this? Come on. Well, it did. And it came back twice, and now third time, and then the fourth time. But if it comes back again, so be it. I'm here, and I'm ready for you. I'm not tapping out.
And that's right, John. That's the attitude that it takes, you know. You just have to be a fighter and be strong and be positive. And being positive is also healing.
Yes, it is.
Shirley?
It's a very key factor in the healing process is the mind. It is a true statement with mind over matter. When your mind is set on a positive track and you take that will and you study, and especially when you believe that God is making, you know, is still in a miracle working business, and you get that positive track going and keep positive people around you, the strength and ability that you will gain is unbelievable. And that does make people wonder, say, are they really sick? You know, I thought they had this and I thought they had that. But your will, you can will yourself to better health, and you can also fight cancer at any given time. It's in you, and you can do it.
Amen.
Yeah. My question to you, John, and also Michael, we have men listening in. What would you say to them regarding this fight, regarding this disease? Regardless of what type of cancer, what would be your words to them?
My first word to every man out there is this: quit being a wimp. What do I mean by that? Most men will take pain, and we're pretty good about taking pain, but we're not going to go see a doctor because they might tell us something that we can't handle. Quit being a wimp. Get up. Go. Get checked. You've heard it tonight many times. The first step, the best step to beating any kind of a cancer, is to get detected early. The second step is to get the right treatment. Remember, it's not every doctor out there that specializes in maybe your type of cancer. And if you're in a little town and you have a small hospital, great, get some information. But there's always somebody who has a better avenue. I wound up at the top cancer center in the world through relentlessness, through determination, through never giving up. And I went there, and I'm glad that I did, because I think back to the three hospitals that said, there's nothing we can do. Go home and get your affairs in order. So what I would tell men is get up, face it, go get your checkups. If you feel pain, get your checkup. If you don't feel pain but you're in that certain age group or you're susceptible, go get your checkup. And if you get diagnosed, then face the music. Go fight this thing and go beat it.
Michael?
I agree with everything that John said, and it's just, you know, you just have to, if you're diagnosed, you just, early detection, number one, is the main thing, and if, you know, if you're diagnosed with cancer, then you just have to cowboy up and just be strong and have that complete positive attitude. Like I said before, have your faith in the Lord and have faith in yourself. And just even though you're going through chemo and whatever, radiation or whatever you might have to go through, but at the same time, do something healthy for yourself. Eat right. Do as much exercise as you can. You don't have to be a fanatic about it or anything, but just do something positive, you know, because everything, the medicine and everything that you're putting into you is negative. One of my doctors told me when I was going through chemo, to just imagine when they put in chemo in your body, it's like putting a bunch of Pac-Men in there, and they're eating up all the bad stuff. But there's in the good part, you can rebuild, you can heal, you know. So I kept that in mind each time I went through chemo. I just imagined that all these little Pac-Men were going through my system, just eating up the cancer and you know whatever else they had to get rid of. And, but like I said, just good eating habits, early detection, having faith in the Lord, and having faith and being positive in yourself.
Thank you so much. I'm going to try and take a couple of callers in. I'll give the last four digits of your phone number. Caller 4392, you're live. You have a question for John or Michael. Okay. Caller 1239, you're live. You have a question or comment?
They need to unmute themselves, right?
Yeah, they're going to have to unmute themselves if they want to say something. Okay, I'm going to call her 2175. You're live. Hello.
Hi, everybody. This is Marie. Thank you so much for letting me share. I tell you, I take my hat off to everybody because I had like 4 aunts. And my mother and 3 of her sisters, they died of cancer. And none of the, you know, they just listened at what the doctor said, and they just didn't take, you know, any of this of what you all are saying, which is so wonderful. And to believe in yourself, you know what I'm saying? And this is just so wonderful. That is just so wonderful to hear people's you know, to understand that, you know, you can live with cancer. And plus, I had one of my nieces just last year to pass, and she was like just in her early 40s. And she just gave up, you know, she just completely gave up. Shirley talked with her because I asked Shirley to talk with her, and she did call Shirley, but she just, you know, she just gave up, you know. And you don't, and from listening at them, you don't have to give up. Just keep your life going, you know. And I just thank you all so much for letting me share that, and God bless each and every last one of you all. Thanks again.
Thank you so much for calling in, Marie. Caller 6477, you're live.
Hi, this is Sylvia Donovan, and my question is to Michael and John both. Your testimonies are touching. How do you think you can really impact men so that they can be more proactive? And both of you talked about early detection, but to really get that sense of urgency that if something is wrong, that they will be willing to go into the doctor.
With the facts, this is John. I think with the facts are these. Men get cancer. The facts are these. Men die of cancer. The facts are these. If men listen and go get early detection tests and get treatment, men can conquer, survive, and beat this thing. That's how. You've got to educate men. You know, we're not, we were cavemen once, I guess, and we're, some of us still are. We just need to get it through our thick skulls that we need to go in and also face the music and face whatever we have to, but we can win.
Thank you so much, John. Michael?
Such as myself, okay, men do not have the same amount of breast tissue that women have, so it's not going to be, you know how you do self-breast exams that women do? Well, there's not a lot there for a man, and so it should, if you notice anything that's abnormal, such as myself, when I first started out, it was like a BB-sized knot. And then by ignoring it for 2 years, when that nodule grew to about the size of a pencil eraser, and that was, it kind of, you know, lit the fire right there. And when my sisters and them told me that I need to get it checked, it was just, you know, just knowing your body, and when something's abnormal, it doesn't feel the same, it doesn't look the same. And even if it's, you know, I think men are afraid of the word breast cancer because they relate it to a woman's disease. That doesn't make any difference. Cancer is cancer, you know. And so my advice is anything that doesn't feel right, doesn't look right, then just go get it checked. Early detection.
I would agree with Michael, and I would add this in a couple of seconds, that also be proactive in your health care. Get fit. We're all too fat. Get fit. Eat well. Think smart.
Yourself, buddy.
Yeah.
I saw you, Valerie. You're about 95 pounds now. You gained a pound.
Thank you so much, Sylvia Dunovich from Celebrating Life. Sylvia, what is your website so individuals can find out more about your organization?
It is www.celebratinglife.org, and Michael Price is one of the subjects in my book, Celebrating Life, African American Women Speak Out About Breast Cancer.
I love you, Sylvia.
Thank you so much.
I love you, too.
John Garcia, you're awesome. You're a speaker. John, where is my book, John?
You're coming in broken up, Valerie. I can't hear you.
John, where is my book, John?
I need to finish writing that book, and I will. I will. Thanks for
the
challenge.
I told you I will help you publish it, Mr. John Garcia.
So I'm glad you asked, and my website is www.johngarcia.com.
and on John's website, you can find out information about his training, seminars, and workshop he does. And as I said, he is a phenomenal motivational speaker. And, you know, you book him, he'll be there. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story as always. And I just can't wait for that book, John.
I'm logging on right now, finishing the next chapter.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Michael, what are you into speaking, or do you have a website or anything that anyone can connect with you with? Are you on Facebook?
I do speak. As a matter of fact, I spoke for a group in Canton, Ohio last week at Mercy Hospital, and it's a breast cancer support group called the Angels of Mercy. And
okay.
I spoke for them last week, and as a matter of fact, I spoke for them about 3 years ago, and they had me back. But to get a hold of me, it would be M, this will be two M's, M Michael's Place at AOL.com.
Thank you so much for that. And you can connect with John on johngarcia.com. And Shirley, close us out, please.
I just want to thank our guests tonight, Michael and John. You're both wonderful encouragement to the men that are in our lives and that are listening on the show tonight, and share the ladies.
Give me a website,
that are,
Shirley.
Oh, my website, easily, Against All Odds. Inc.org and ShirleyMCarter.com. So I have a couple websites you can reach me at. And I'm also on Facebook, Shirley M. Carter.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate you for being so candid and sharing to empower the men to go out and get checked. Don't be a wimp. We need you, my kings. We need you, so that you can be here to stand in the gap for us. And you can find me at www.fromthesoulofawoman.com, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter, Valerie Parker, on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us on another Hot Topic from the Soul. Good night, and always keep God first.
Good night.